This is Matthew Schwartz from Pacifico, and you're listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Dominate.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I have to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Being realistic.
As the story grows.
I always wanted to be part of a small rebellion.
You got this, Travis. Make them wait for it. Boom.
I'll say what you need me to. Just please come back and fight. I promise that you're fine, that I'm no more perfect than the scars. Chase the blame around, it's lost, cannot be found. Because true, it's true, I may explode with you, but no one else will do. So I'll hold my breath.
Like I've listened to your music for a long time, and I was trying to remember, what's the label that put out the split with Copeland?
Theory 8 Records.
Theory 8, yeah. So yeah, I must have just been on their mp3.com page way back in the day when mp3.com was a thing, and like found the split via that, and they had a song from Copeland and a song from you guys, and like ended up mail ordering that split. And that was my introduction to Pacifico. So I was on your website earlier today, and I don't think I realized, it seemed like you guys were pretty popular there for a little bit. Yeah.
Yes and no, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, okay. Like there definitely was some times where we were like selling out shows and stuff, especially in our hometowns and touring a bunch. So yeah, there were leaner and there were bigger times for sure.
But it seemed like movie soundtracks and some, not the MTV play, which I'm sure just means like your music was featured on Real World, and I still get royalty checks from playing on a song that was on Real World. So that I understand that does not mean you're raking in the dough, but it seems like you guys had a bit of a thing going for a while, right?
Yeah, things for there in the early 2000s were really on it. They were really going about that time when we were doing the split. That's where things were starting to get to catch fire for us. We were selling out shows in Atlanta, and we were having a music video played on MTV and Fuse, and we were doing showcases for labels and you know, all that kind of jazz, having music and TV shows, and yeah.
That's cool. I was trying to figure out, I had made an assumption you were on the West Coast, which I guess just because the name of the band is Pacifico, and I made a bad assumption that you're from the West Coast, but have you always been in the Georgia, Atlanta area?
No. So the band originated in the Metro Atlanta area, and then around 2004-ish, the band broke up, basically, like the physical idea of the band. All the guys, you know, got older, had more responsibilities, didn't want to tour, and I just wanted to keep pushing. So they gave me the name and gave me, you know, I wrote songs anyway, so they gave me the song, gave me the name, and I had all the merch and all that kind of stuff. So then I started trying to figure out what to do from there, and I lived in North Carolina for 5 years after that, and then I lived in Louisiana for 7 years. And there was a period in 2003, but I guess before the band broke up, that we had a manager from Chicago or whatever, and he went out to LA and was doing groundwork for us, and we were supposed to move out there for a year and do music full time for a year and tour and do showcases and all that kind of stuff. And then we got out there, we had sold everything we had, driven across country, showed up to the hotel room, and then he tells us that he spent all the money that we'd given him. We have no place to stay that night. and that we need to get more money, and our parents didn't want us to be there in the first place. So we, luckily enough, we had some friends that were from Atlanta that had just moved there a couple months before. So we didn't know what we were doing because we had moved out there. We weren't just coming to visit. We had moved. So we had seven people living in a one bedroom apartment for about 3 months, and we all worked and I got jobs. I worked at City Walk and, at Universal Studios at the Starbucks. But we got to play at the Whiskey Go-Go. We did a showcase there, and that was pretty awesome. I mean, it was a good time. Yeah, so we've been on the West Coast for very little. I also recorded an album out there, so that's my only West Coast, you know, other than touring and stuff, only kind of like West Coast connection. Otherwise, everything's pretty much been Southeast.
Gotcha. That's cool. Man, let's back up. How'd you get into music?
My father is a minister of music and education in the Southern Baptist Church, and so it started with having to stay late for choirs and such. And then as soon as I got old enough to be in like children's choir, I was in that. I even remember being a child and singing in the adult choir because I needed to fill in seats, and they kind of guilted me into it. And my first solo was, you know, a church play or whatever, and I hated it. I kind of always was singing songs to myself when I would walk around and stuff. And then we had a piano at the house, and I was playing that and kind of writing classical pieces or whatever. And so then my parents convinced me to take piano lessons. And so I did that, took piano lessons and such for a while. And then I got to be about 15, always wanted to play guitar. My dad had one in a closet that I knew he had, but he didn't know I knew he had it, kind of thing. Went to a church camp, and they were given lessons, so I learned how to play. I think the first two songs was the Barney song and Wipeout. And so I learned those, came home, and then I learned the complete Nirvana catalog and taught myself how to play everything else. And then from there, it was kind of, I was writing like crazy, and my brother and I started my first band together. He sang and I played guitar, and we had a couple guys play from church with us, and then that dissolved and, you know, went on to another band and another band, and, you know, you get it.
Yeah. The Barney song is in I Love You, You Love Me.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I can't play it anymore, but...
I like that you went from, I learned to play the Barney song, and then all of Nirvana's discography.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, not to discredit Nirvana, because Kurt was a great songwriter, but the stuff was not hard to play.
Well, yeah. It's like learning to play Green Day, right? You're just like, oh, it's these chords, and it's these bar chords in varying degrees. You just figure it out.
I mean, really, all the music right there in that early 90s was pretty easy. I mean, I remember I was learning Nirvana, I was learning Pearl Jam, I was learning Everclear, Better Than Ezra. I mean, all that stuff's pretty easy to play. Weezer, yeah, Green Day, yeah.
Yeah. How did Pacifico first come about?
I had been playing, so after... I guess I was without a band for a while, and I had found out there's this band that I had heard of that was looking for a guitar player. But they were looking for like a lead guitar player. I've never been a lead guy. I can play a little bit of everything, but I can never play anything amazing. So I went and tried out to play in this band, and I didn't make the cut. But they invited me to come to a show of theirs I think before my audition, to like see if I you just kind of show that I was interested and kind of see what to do and stuff. So I went and played, and the opening band, this band got on stage, and they were looking really confused. There were three of them up there, and this guy looked like he was having a hard time, and I was like, introduced myself, trying to schmooze and meet people. And they told me that they were looking for their bass player quit that day, and their lead singer, I think, was learning how to play bass, so he could do it. And I was like, well, I could do that for you. If you just write out the chords, I'll play with you tonight. So, because I was trying to impress that other band, I was like, if I can show them, then I can do, you know.
Yeah.
So I went and played, and that band was called Linger, and it was a Christian band. We used to play churches and all that stuff. So anyway, they it's funny because I brought my brother with me to the show, and I was kind of, my brother was a bass player and I was a guitar player. That was the whole thing. So I thought that maybe I would get them to want to hire my brother, but they were like, no, no, we want you to play with me. So I joined this band Linger, played with them for, I don't know, a year or two or something like that. And, but towards the end of the band, they were wanting to have more collaboration with writing. And so they would be like, show us some songs. And they were telling me like what kind of music they were wanting to do. Well, I guess I knew too because I'd been in the band. So I was trying to write stuff. So I was writing stuff and I'd bring it to them and they kept like turning it down every time. And the drummer in the band, Joel, he came to me and he's like, I really like your songs. He's like, we should just do a side project and do your music. And so that's how Pacifico started. We kind of got together at his place and picked out some songs that he liked of mine and worked them out. And then we had another band that we had played with a lot, and we stole their bass player. We had to call them up, and I was like, hey, you're a great bass player. Will you play with us? And he's like, I'm already in a band. I was like, yeah, but we're better. And so then we took him, and then that's how it started. And the name we got from the Lassie Foundation album, Pacifico, that had come out. I'm a big Starflower fan, and Wayne Everett did that with a lot of those guys from Prayer Chain or whatever. And I don't know, I bought that album, really liked it, and the drummer and I, Joel and I, listened to it, and we just liked, because we like Nirvana, you know, the one name kind of thing, Pacifico kind of hit for us, and we're like, that's a great name, let's use that. And there you go.
That's what I was wondering. I didn't know if the timing of years lined up between Lassie Foundation and Pacifico forming, if that made sense, but that is what came to mind, that Lassie Foundation was an influence there.
Yeah, it's funny because I saw some people online buying the Lassie Foundation Pacifico on vinyl, and I'd never had it, and I was like, I should own that. You know, name my band after it. So I got it, and it says that it came out in 2000, and Pacifico started in 99, so I guess we just, for 6 months or whatever, didn't have a name. And then when I got that album is when we picked a name, so.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there was, like, was that song on another album? I don't know. I don't think so.
It's possible, but I don't think so either.
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to look to get dates because I didn't want to ask that question and be like, oh no, that album came out way later. But if you're saying it, so I guess it kind of made sense somewhere along the line.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I got it from that album too. So I'm pretty sure we just didn't have a name for a bit. Because I mean, it's hard to come up with a name and come up with something that's good. And even though we were the only Pacifico at the time, now there's some guy in Italy who has Pacifico as a name, and he's been going for, I don't know, 7 years or something like that, and he's very successful over there, and it causes me problems all the time where our music gets mixed up or whatever, and I'm pretty sure he took me off of Wikipedia not too long ago. Because he wasn't on there, now he's on there, and I'm not, and I'm like, oh, come on, man, we can both exist. I can't afford to get an international lawyer to have him change his name, but...
How did you guys get hooked up with their 8 Records back in the day?
You know what? I'm not exactly sure how Aaron found us, the guy that ran it. I just remember getting a email or phone call or something from him, and then just saying that he liked our music and he wanted to do a split EP with us and a band from Florida named Copeland, which actually their name wasn't even Copeland at the time. It was called Ev Angel, and then they changed it right before the split came out. I'm assuming he found out about us through Matt Goldman, because we recorded our first EP with Matt Goldman. We had some of those songs ended up on like the MTV thing and stuff. We were getting the momentum going and such, and then we got the caller email from Theory 8, and they had said that they wanted Matt Goldman to produce it. And since Matt kind of was getting his name out there and trying to help us out and stuff, we didn't pay very much for the initial EP. So we did a remix of one of the songs that was on that EP for the split EP to kind of offset, because he was getting paid to the split EP. So there's three songs by each band on there, but one of them is just a remix of one of the songs from the EP.
Gotcha. What's the EP
still on hold? Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
And I will say probably one of the things I regret is we were trying to, we are already starting to demo for labels and stuff like that. And we, rather than putting our best songs on that split, we didn't pick songs we hated, but we picked maybe like B sides, you know, and didn't put our best foot forward. And I kind of regret that a little bit. Not that I don't like those songs. I think they turned out amazing and great and I really like them, but I think that, we should have probably restructured when we were doing that back then. But you know, yeah, are you young and dumb and, you know, think some things are better than others.
Yeah. Who released, the anthology record?
All that started after the band kind of broken up and I had the name and had all these songs. Okay. we had been demoing forever, and anthology is basically every song that we had demoed that nothing ever happened with. So we had them remixed and then mastered all together for like one release. But that was a label called Alalom, and it was out of Portland. This guy named Samuel.
Got you.
He called or emailed me, same thing. You know, said he liked my stuff. We did that first, and then we did the Face Down EP, and then we did Thin Skin together with Jason Martin from Starflyer, and then Alalom ceased to be anymore.
So all your like hype came. That was all from Still on Hold, from Multiply, or no? I guess I'm just trying to figure out the timeline, because it seemed like you know, there's the Copeland split, which Copeland kind of exploded from there. And just looking at your bio, you know, you had a song in the Wish for Christmas movie, and then, you know, MTV Infused playing the Multiply video. So I guess I'm curious, like, the timeline for...
Yeah, I mean, everything was pretty on a gradual uphill thing. I mean, you started with a Still on Hold, and we had play more shows and got stuff in, like, on TV, music on TV and stuff. And then we did the split, which that brought us to another level, and things were doing really, really well. And then we did Anthology, and Anthology is where, I guess really it was before the Multiply video that was on MTV Infused is the Multiply that's on Anthology, but that hadn't come out yet because we were just demoing. So it really, honestly, looking back, because I was a young kid, didn't know how any of this worked, we basically were promoting a song that no one could get, because unless they came to a show and we gave them a burnt CD or something, or they were our friend, man. Because we weren't selling, it wasn't available. So we basically, when it was on rotation on MTV and Fuse, it didn't exist. Like, you couldn't purchase it.
My goodness.
It's just, you know, like, there was a cool video that was made, and that was it. So, but then after that, it was released on Anthology. But during that time, when we were doing all the, you know, where that video was on and stuff, that's when we were doing showcases in New York and L.A. and Atlanta and like, you know, demoing, like, all the time. And we'd have labels be like, really like this, but can you change that? So then we'd record the song all over again and change two or three parts just with the label and then, you know, all this kind of stuff. And that's what we were going through with that. And I'm definitely one of those that can tell you like two or three times where, you know, everything was supposed to come together and one little thing fell apart, you know. The closest would be like we had a A&R guy from Atlantic Records be talking to our manager, and he said on a Friday, he was like, I'm going to send you papers on Monday and sign this band. This band's amazing. So they call us and we celebrate all weekend. And we're like, we're getting signed. Oh, my God. And then Monday comes around and we don't hear anything. I call the manager and I'm like, what's going on? He's like, well, I hadn't heard anything from him, and then I called him, and they let him go at 5 o'clock on Friday, because it was when all the record labels were crumbling and stuff, and so they let this A&R guy go on Friday at 5, and so it never happened.
Oh, man. So what was that, like 01, 02, 03, roughly that time frame?
Yeah, that was probably about 02, maybe 03.
Okay. Yeah.
Man, that's so funny. It doesn't seem like that long ago, but then you think like, oh, it's like nearly 20 years ago at this point.
Closer
to 20 years ago. And it's like, yeah, now you just put that song up on Bandcamp and the video on YouTube, and like it wouldn't matter if you didn't have a record out. Like it would just be a hit. And it's like, here's our video that's on MTV, but we don't have an album to sell you, so we are nothing. Like, it's so crazy.
Yeah. I mean, because at the time, unless you had an actual label with distribution, no one could get your album. I mean, this was like, I think that Napster had just started, so I could have uploaded it there or something like that. But like,
nobody was looking for you.
Right, yeah, there was no, I mean, internet was so new that like, not many people were going to be going online searching for us, and like, they can't go to the store and get it, then what was the use, you know?
Yeah.
But you're right, it's weird, because now, I mean, I could put something up today, and then put out a video, and boom, there you go. Yeah, if I were somebody that found a band like that and never found them again, it would drive me nuts for a month.
So then you talked about Thin Skin and Open Heart. So you did that with Jason Martin from Starfly 59. How did that come about?
So in the middle there, while I was doing Face Down and when Anthology was coming out, I was in another band at the same time in North Carolina called Monday in London. And we were touring full time and doing showcases for labels and stuff too and all that kind of crap. They broke up right before Thin Skin and Open Heart. I had been on Owl Alum. Samuel and I had talked about doing a full length. At that point I'd been doing Pacifica, I guess this was 2009, so I've been doing Pacifica almost 10 years, and I had yet to put out one full length album, unless you count Anthology, which was more of a compilation of demos, I guess you would say, you know. So we talked about it, and he's like, well, what do you want to do? And kind of like, he was like, well, you know, what if you had to pick someone to work with, who would you want to work with? And I'm a huge Starflyer fan, so I was like, I would love to work with Jason Martin. And he's like, well, actually, I know someone that knows him. Let me see what I can do. So he went and called and shared music, and Jason agreed. And so him and I talked on the phone a couple times, and then we agreed to do it. And so I flew out to... I guess first what I did is I made demos to a click track, did pre-production with the guys from Manchester Orchestra here in Atlanta, at their studio. And they helped me like structure the songs and record the songs to a click track and stuff. And then I sent it back to him. He did drums before I even got there with Sam West from Stavesaker. And then, that was really nerve wracking because I had never been that far away from something that, you know, my first full length, you know, and it's like my baby, and I'm like that far away from being able to control anything. So I was really relying on him a lot, and I don't know the guy, I just love his music. So, I mean, like, it was really kind of nerve wracking, but there's only like one song where I think I would have done the drums differently, really. The rest of it, I think, you know, turned out amazing. And then booked a flight, and I flew out there, and we finished it. The only, I guess, member that came out there as well is my buddy CJ. He flew out there as well and still stayed with some friends, and him and I went to the studio every day, and it was just CJ, myself, Jason Martin, and then Stephen Dial from Project 86, and the four of us made the record, and we just did it in this it's like a storage container kind of place, you know, like where you would go and put your, you know, fishing stuff when it's not fishing season or whatever, kind of thing that they turned into a rehearsal space / recording studio. And so we just went there every day. I was staying with a friend of mine about 30 minutes away in Universal City, and then I got a thing called Render Wreck. It was literally like what it sounds like. It was a piece of crap car that they rent to you. And I drove that 30 minutes into Riverside, and we recorded and then drove back at the end of every day. And did that for about 2 weeks, and that was that album.
That's crazy. And yeah, since then, I mean, yeah, working with Jason Martin and having Steve and Sam on that record, and then you did work with Jesse Sprinkle on Without Heroes and Ronnie Martin on the latest full length, or the last full length, Everest. It's pretty impressive.
When the band quit, and I guess from Thin Skin on, it got to the point where like I kind of was, especially because Monday Luna had broken up too, and then the guys in Pacifico had left me Pacifico, like I kind of got tired of getting bandmates, you know, and like having to do press releases and photo shoots. And so like I really got into like the Gorillaz, and I really liked the way that people like them or like Bright Eyes, where like every album might be a little different and have different people play on it, but it's still the same moniker kind of thing. Starflyer does that too. I really liked that kind of autonomy and freedom. So it just kind of worked out. I mean, the reason that the people played on Thin Skin was just because that's what Jason had, and he, you know, and I trusted him, and I let him do pretty much what he wanted to do. And I was so fresh and new with that. You know, I've been in the studio several times. I'd never done it by myself. And I really honestly can be so grateful I had someone that knew what they're doing. When it came to the next one, Without Heroes with Jesse Sprinkle, I had been friends with Jesse Sprinkle and met him at a show that we played together in Atlanta years ago, and we kind of became pen pals, and he'd send me music, I'd send him music, and, you know, every once in a while we'd see each other at a show or whatever. I remember I went to Cornerstone to play one year, and it was the year that Poor Lou got to back together, their reunion show, and I just happened to see him, and we were talking, and he knew that I was a big fan of Poor Lou, so he pulled me on stage, and I got to stand on stage for the reunion of Poor Lou, and that was amazing for me, you know. And then when they were doing the album The Waiting Room, we were just for some reason talking at the time. He sent me a recording from the mics in the studio. They had an earthquake, and so I have that somewhere of just the earthquake on recorded from when they recorded The Waiting Room. We'd always wanted to work together, and then this album came up, and I was kind of between drummers, and I was like, you know, I want to work with him, this guy. This is the guy I want to work with. So I flew up to New York, and we did the drums up there, and then did it in pieces. I did the next piece in North Carolina, where I lived at the time, and got guys that I knew and wanted to play with there. And then we went to Athens and did strings and lead guitar and background vocals there. And then I actually moved before I even finished it and moved to Louisiana. So when I was in Louisiana, I did horns and percussion there and finished it. The Ronnie Martin thing, that one's not much different either. We again played a show with Joy Electric in Atlanta. Ronnie and I became friends. He actually managed Pacifico for a while. He was trying to get us signed to Tooth and Nail. I talked to Brandon Ebel on the phone a couple times and stuff, and then they ended up signing some band named Cadet instead of us. He's like, we went with this other three-piece band, whatever, and, you know, I think they did one album and then never existed again. And Ronnie also pushed us towards, like, you know, 5-Minute Walk and all of those, you know, labels that were kind of in that same vein or whatever, and none of them really were biting for whatever reason. And so he kind of washed his hands of it. But he always was a big fan. He would send me records of his and, you know, ask this care stuff we're doing. And he always wanted to work. I remember first meeting, he was getting into production. He was doing, I think, the first Fine China stuff, like on Velvet Blue. And between him and Jason, our first release ever was our first song ever released was on a Velvet Blue sampler because of them. But yeah, Ronnie wanted to produce an album of us, and I just couldn't see it because I was like, we were more punk, you know, more rock kind of thing, and I just could not see Synths involved in that in any way, shape, or form at the time. So I just kind of, you know, was like, sorry, buddy, you know. But when I was working on Everest, I was writing stuff that was more dancey, and like, and I needed synths, and I was like, well, why not ask the synth master if he would want to work with me, since we've always wanted to do this. And of course he agreed, and there we go.
That's cool, because that record came out in 2017, and he's basically been largely, at least publicly, off the radar outside of being a pastor, right?
Yeah, he does the said fantasy thing. I think every year he's been, at least for the last 2 years, he's done two Christmas EPs with the said fantasy thing that he does. But yeah, he mainly just does the pastoring. But, I mean, I talked to him about it, and he's interested. I sent him songs. He loved them, and I sent him the demos to QuickTrack, and then he did his parts and sent them to me, and then we just built around it. And, he did a great job, and I'm super happy to have him on there. And I think that's really cool that he did that. So.
How'd the remix EP come about?
Well, I've always been a fan of remixes. I think it started because I was fans of Radiohead and fans of, you know, of the early stuff and Tooth and Nail. And I had a lot of, like, especially like every EP that Joy Electric put out, and at least the first EP, this She's the Queen that Starflyer put out, all had remixes on it. And then Radiohead, like, almost every, you know, B-side they had would have some kind of remix. And I kind of always been a little bit of a fan of that. And my first experience with the remixes was when we were doing Anthology. My buddy Trevor, who plays in right now he's in a band called Quiet Company, but he used to do, and I think he said he's working on a new album for it, but he had a band called, at one point it was called My High School Sweetheart, and then it just got shortened as High School Sweetheart. It was all electronic music stuff, and he's super talented. He did a remix of one of our songs off of that, and then since then I've had him do, except for I guess for Everest, he hasn't done one for that album, but every other album he's done a remix of a song for it. When I did Thin Skin, I did the EP. I just contacted people, and Avalon helps with that as well, like hook us up with some people that did remix. So we did remix EP for that, and then basically I just thought with Everest, like, it would be cool to do the same thing. The Thin Skin remix album, I actually, like, I guess commissioned people. Like I Ronnie Martin did one on there, and then this guy named Tester, that's pretty big jungle DJ, he did one, and like, you know, so I like actually like picked people and contacted them and paid people and such. But when, you know, you kind of get in the thick of music and how much everything costs, I'm just like, you know, I don't mind. I'm obviously, I'm paying for people's time. I'm not trying to belittle their time at all in any way, shape or form. But I just can't really afford it all the time, especially not a higher level people. So when Everest came around, it was like, I can't really afford it. You know, maybe if somebody wants to do it and it's not too expensive, then I can afford that. Or if somebody just wants to do it for fun kind of thing. So yeah, I put it out on the interweb. If anybody wants to remix a song, let me know. And then I sent stems to people, and then they remixed it and sent it back to me. I really love, though, I do love hearing how people change the songs, because they'll put different chords. There's one song that's on the Thin Skin remix where they changed the key and the tempo. Like it's just so crazy how people can envision something so different from the original. Some people play it safe. Some people just go left field. And I love that, because, like, at some point, like, it's not even my song anymore, you know?
Yeah, it's fun to listen to other songs and, like, think about what you might do to them if you had limitless resources and could just, like, change them up or just, like, add something in there. That would be crazy.
And that's the thing, like, so what Pacifico is a collective, and it's about collaboration. And so that part of the website that you see there, it's really just, like, if anyone has an idea of something that they want to contribute or that we should try doing, or they want to collaborate with us on or whatever, we're open to suggestions. Basically, that's what that's there for. You know, kind of just keep the lines of communication open and keep our I don't know, keep everything fresh.
That's cool. Where do you draw lyrical inspiration from?
Lyrical. It's a good question. I hate writing lyrics. that's my least favorite thing to do. I do it last. I usually write a song and then I'll have it for however many months before, it's usually months or years before I actually will record it. And when it gets time to record it, I'll make a demo of it. And when I make the demo, I just literally press record on my phone or on, you know, some recording program and play and sing at the same time. And then sing whatever's on the top of my head. Like, don't even think about words, just kind of feel the moment. And then I go back and I listen to those demos and I see if there's any words that I said, that made sense, you know, or that were really good. A lot of times the hooks are already there kind of thing. And then I kind of, you know, go, what is this song about? You know, I keep saying whatever and, you know, and then try to figure out what it's about. For Everest, it was probably the hardest, slash most rewarding lyric wise because I just literally, it was the most stuck I've ever been. Like, I could not get myself out. I kept writing, every song was literally about the same thing and I kept saying the same words and it was making me mad because I just was basically just singing to myself in a circle. So I decided that I wanted to, collaborate with somebody. I'm a big Beach Boys fan and stuff. And so I kind of took cues from Brian Wilson and was like, you know, he worked with Tony Asher and can't remember the other guy's name, guy from Smile. You'll get some comments and I'll tell you what it is. And like, you know, those guys were poets and guys that were good with words, you know? And so, I decided to reach out to this poet that I had met at an art event. His name is Vincent Salucci. And, I remember seeing him read some of his poetry and I was like, man, that's really good. And I connected with it. So I contacted him and we met up and talked and we decided that we would give it a try. And so every week we would meet either at his house or my house and we would hang out for about, I don't know, 2 hours-ish, give or take, and just try to get a song or two done. And then it just worked. It just, I mean, the first night we were together, we finished a song, you know, it was like, all right, cool. This is it, you know? And if anything, I mean, it was great to have somebody that's very knowledgeable with words and such to kind of like give me some confidence and help me, you know, push me a little bit. But at the same time, I mean, like, it was really great to have that fresh air too, to have somebody that, you know, also had things that he needed to get off his chest and needed to say, and we bounced off each other really well. But yeah, overall, sorry, I didn't really answer your question. Overall, I don't really know if I have I think probably one of the best lyricists I know would be David Bazan. But yeah. I in no way am a David Bazan.
right.
I remember when I was recording with Jason Martin, he was telling me I was having some trouble with some lyrics. And he's like, honestly, man, lyrics don't matter. He's like, you can say anything. Just go and write something down and then go say it in there, like, you know, that kind of thing. And I kind of always felt that way too, because like when I grew up, you know, Pearl Jam was big. You couldn't understand a word that guy was saying, you know. Right. And then, you know, I grew up loving like 60s music too, and you got like Wooly Bully. What does that mean? You know, like, that doesn't mean anything, you know. Like, so like, it's kind of a toss up. I mean, I know that they mean something, you know, and like, so I want them to be good. And I want people that do care about lyrics to be able to connect with those. But at the same time, I think I'm more concerned about melody and arrangement and chord structure and that kind of stuff, production. So, I mean, I feel like if I can get the musical part of it where people can connect to it and like it, and even if they were bad, wouldn't care, but then I can also push myself at least write something that's good or decent, and you know, then hopefully I've done my job as a songwriter. I prefer to write stuff that's a little bit more vague, I think, in general. I like the idea of the listener kind of being able to discern what they want out of the song rather than being very, very like there was a girl on a bus. It was blue, you know, like given every, you know, I don't want to like be that specific.
So you put out Everest in 2017. What's next, man? I feel like you always have something on the horizon.
I do. I am. So we just had a single, the last song on Everest, The Loneliest Man in the World. We just released that as a single and a music video in April. Okay. So that's out there. And then I am mixing right now the next single. It's called When We Were Wild. And it's, since Pacifica started in 99, it's our 20th anniversary single. And I recorded it. It's kind of, a big thing. It's a lofty thing for me to try to do. But basically, I recorded, since I lived in Georgia, North Carolina, and Louisiana, I recorded three different versions of the same song in Atlanta,
okay,
North Carolina, and Louisiana. And got with those guys that in each city that I had been banned with. Like in North Carolina, I had some of the guys from Monday in London, as well as some guys that I played with in Pacifico, and even just some friends that, you know, I always wanted to play with but never have, you know, kind of thing. And anyway, with each version, I let them, the only thing that had to stay the same was the key and the tempo. But everything else, the arrangements can all be different and stuff. So each arrangement is much different from each version is completely different. And then I'm also going to do the fourth version, which is actually going to be the single version. And it's a mega mix. And it's going to be, the idea came from watching a documentary about how Beck made like Odelay and Midnight Vultures with the Dust Brothers. And the Dust Brothers were DJs and stuff. And basically what they would do is, because they couldn't sample stuff anymore and because Beck was actually a songwriter, they would go listen to records and then they would record like 30 second to a minute long sections of songs similar to the songs that they liked on the record. And then they would sample those in Beck's songs. And so I really love this idea, and I get in my head about production and stuff. So I was like, I want to try that. So my idea is to basically take these three different versions, and then like verse one might be North Carolina, and then we go into verse two, we jump into Georgia, but we might have the guitar from Louisiana, and then, you know, that kind of thing. So we do like a mega mix kind of thing for the single, and there will be a video with it too, and that'll come out this summer. And then when that drops, I'm doing a crowdsourcing campaign for a full length. And I'm already doing pre-production with that, and I'm actually doing that with Aaron Sprinkle.
You got both Martin brothers, y'all get both Sprinkle brothers. That's perfect balance.
Yeah, it wasn't planned that way, and it's so funny too, because it's seesawed. I mean, I did a Martin and then a Sprinkle, then a Martin, now a Sprinkle. But it just kind of worked that way. I'm a huge Aaron Sprinkle fan. I've always wanted to have him like on my list of like short list of producers. He's always been on there, and we've known each other through friends and met several times and just never been able to connect. And I just wrote him out of the blue and told him that I wanted to work with him. And he said that he would love to work with me. And there we are. So we're doing pre-production for that now. I'll wait for current soul.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our theme song was written and composed by the legendary Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes and give the show a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, click on the Patreon link at asthestorygrows.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening.